Long before the curfew bell, they had all slipped out of the central lager singly and in pairs, Jan Schroot and his Cape boys taking the horses with them. And by the time Ralph and Harry Mellow strolled down the main street, as though they were taking the evening air before returning to the lager for dinner, the others were all gathered in the walled garden at the end of the street. Sergeant Ezra had brought the kilts and spears and knobkerries, and Jan Schroot had the big black three-legged pot of beef fat and lamp-black boiled to a paste. Ralph and Harry and the Hottentots stripped naked and smeared each other with the rancid mixture, taking care to work it in around the back of the ears, the knees and the elbows, and below the eyes where pale skin might show. By the time the curfew bell in the Anglican church began to toll, they were all dressed in the kilts of Matabele Amadoda. Ralph and Harry covered their hair, which would have betrayed them, with headdresses of black widow bird feathers. Isasi and Jan Schroot strapped the rawhide booties over the hooves of the horses, while Ralph gave his final orders, speaking in Sindibele, the only language they would be using during the entire raid. They left the town in the sudden darkness between sunset and moonrise, the hoofbeats of the horses deadened by the rawhides, and Ezra's Matabele running at the stirrups on silent bare feet. After the first hour, Ralph muttered a curt order to the Matabele, and they took a stirrup leather and hung from it, a man on each side of the horses. The pace of the march never slackened below a canter. They swept south and eastwards, until the crenellated crests of the Matopus hills were outlined against the moon-pale sky. A little after midnight, Ezra grunted, "This is the place." Ralph rose in the stirrups and raised his right arm. The column bunched up and dismounted. Jan Schroot's reputed bastard, Tass, came to take the horses, while Jan Schroot himself checked his men's weapons. "I'll put them against the firelight for you," Ralph whispered to him. "Watch for my signal." Then Ralph smiled at Isasi, his teeth glinting in the shiny black mask of his daubed face. "There'll be no prisoners. Lie close, but beware of Jan Schroot's bullets. Henshaw, I want to go in with you." Harry Mellow spoke in Sindibele, and Ralph answered him in the same language. "You shoot better than you talk. Go with Jan Schroot." At another order from Ralph, every one of them reached into the leather pouch on his hip and brought out a white cow-tailed tassel necklace. They were the recognition insignia that might prevent them killing each other in the press of the fighting. Only Ralph added another ornament to his dress. From his hip pouch he brought the strip of moleskin and bound it around his upper arm. Then he hefted the heavy assegai and leadwood knobkerry and nodded at Ezra. "Lead." The line of Matabele, with Ralph running in second place, trotted at a traverse across the slope of the hill. As they turned the southern buttress, they saw the red glow of a watchfire in the valley below. Ralph sprinted past Ezra to the front of the line. He filled his lungs and began to sing, "Lift the rock under which sleeps the serpent. Lift the rock and let the mamba loose. The mamba of Mashobani has silver fangs of steel." It was one of the fighting songs of the Insukamini Impi, and behind him the line of Matabele picked up the refrain in their deep melodious voices. It resounded from the hills and woke the camp in the valley. Naked figures, risen from their sleeping mats, threw wood on the fires, and the red glow lit the underside of the acacia trees, so they formed a canopy like a circus tent overhead. Ezra had estimated there were 40 Amadoda guarding the horses, but there were more than that already gathering around the fires, and every second more flocked into the bivouac, the outposts coming in to see what was causing the commotion. Ralph had planned for that. He wanted no stragglers. They must be concentrated, so that his riflemen could fire into the bunch, making one bullet do the work of three or four. Ralph trotted into the Matabele encampment. "Who commands here?" Ralph broke off the battle song and demanded in a bellow. "Let the commander stand forth to hear the word I bring from Gandang." He knew from the account that Robin had given him of the massacre on the Kami Hills that the old Induna was one of the leaders of the uprising. His choice of name had the effect he had hoped for. "I am Mazui," A warrior stepped forward respectfully. I wait for the word of Gandang, son of Mzilikatsi. Their horses are no longer safe in this place. The white men have learned where they are. At the rise of the sun, we will take them deeper into the hills, Ralph told him, to a place that I shall show you. It shall be done. Where are the horses? They are in the kraal, guarded by my Amadoda, safe from the lions. Bring in all your pickets, Ralph ordered. And the commander shouted an order and then turned back to Ralph eagerly. What news is there of the fighting? There has been a great battle, Ralph launched into a fanciful account, miming the fighting in the traditional way, leaping and shouting and stabbing in the air with his assegai. Thus we came upon the rear of the horsemen, and thus we stabbed them. His own Matabili gave him a chorus of long, drawn-out, gee, and leapt and postured with him. The audience was enraptured, beginning to stamp and sway in sympathy with Ralph and his Matabili. The sentries and pickets had come in from the periphery of the camp. No more hurrying black figures emerged from the shadows. They were all here. 100, perhaps 120, not more, Ralph estimated, against his 40 men. Not unfair odds. Jan Schroot's Cape boys were all first-rate marksmen, and Harry Mellow with a rifle was worth 5 ordinary men. From close at hand, on the first slope of the hill, a nightjar called. It was a musical, quavering cry that sounded like, Good Lord, deliver us. This pious sentiment gave the bird its popular name, the Litany Bird. It was the signal which Ralph had been listening for. He felt a bleak satisfaction that Jan Schroot had followed his orders so strictly. From the position on the slope, Jan Schroot would have the crowd of Amadoda silhouetted against the firelight. Making it all part of the dance, Ralph whirled away, still prancing and stamping, opening a distance of 20 paces between himself and the nearest Matabili. Here he ended his dance abruptly with his arms spread like a crucifix. He stood deathly still, staring at his audience with wild eyes, and a silence fell upon them all. Slowly Ralph raised his arms above his head. He stood like that for a moment, a heroic figure glistening with fat, every muscle in his arms and chest standing proud, the kilt of civet tails hanging to his knees, the collar of white cow tails around his neck, his charm against the death that lurked in the darkness beyond the firelight. His blackened features were twisted into a ferocious grimace that held the watchers spellbound. The dancing and singing had served its purpose well. It had distracted the Amadoda and masked any noise that the Zulus and Hottentots might have made while moving into position around the bivouac. Now suddenly Ralph let out a demoniacal howl that made the Amadoda shudder, and he dropped his arms, the signal for which Harry and Jan Schroot were waiting. The curtains of darkness were torn aside by the blast of massed rifle fire. The range was point-blank, the muzzles almost touching the press of dark naked bodies. It smashed into them, a single bullet churning through belly and chest and spine, bringing down 4 men, stopping only when the slug broke up against one of the heavy bones of pelvis or femur. So unexpected was the assault that the mass of warriors milled aimlessly, receiving 3 volleys from the repeating Winchesters before they broke and ran. More than half of them were down already, and many of those still on their feet were wounded. They ran on top of Izasi Zulus and piled up against them like water on a dam wall. Ralph heard the great shouts of, Ingidla! I have eaten, as the Zulus put in the steel, and heard the screams of the dying men. Now at last the Matabili were rallying, closing up shoulder to shoulder to meet the thin line of Zulus and overrun it. It was the moment Ralph had waited for. He led his own Matabili racing across their rear and flung them at the naked, undefended backs of the struggling warriors. Long ago, as boys on the Kimberley Diamond Workings, Butso had taught Ralph the art of spearmanship. Ralph had been as skilful with the broad blade as any of the Matabili youths, who were his companions. However, it was one thing to practice the long, underhanded killing stroke, and another actually to send the point into living flesh. Ralph was unprepared for the sensation of the steel in his hand, running in and slowing against the sucking resistance, feeling the steel touch and grate on bone and the haft kick in his hand as his victims bucked and convulsed at the agony. It felt like the butt of the rod when a salmon makes its first run. Instinctively, Ralph twisted the blade in the man's body, the way Butzo had taught him, maximizing the tissue damage and breaking the vacuum that held the steel. Then he jerked it clear, and for the first time felt the fine, hot spray of blood from the wound fly into his face and splatter his right arm and chest. He stepped over the dying man who thrashed on the earth and sank the steel again and then again. The smell of blood and the screams maddened him. But it was a cold, fierce madness that magnified his vision and slowed down the microseconds of mortal combat so that he saw the counter-thrust and turned his adversary's blade aside with contemptuous ease, using the momentum of his shoulders to drive his own point through the Matabele guard and into the notch formed by the joint of his collarbones at the base of his throat. The man's breath whistled over his severed vocal cords, and he dropped his assegai and seized Ralph's blade with his bare hands. Ralph pulled it back, and the razor edges cut to the bone of the man's fingers, and his hands fell open nervelessly as the Matabele dropped to his knees. Ralph leapt over him and poised to thrust again. "Henshaw!" a voice screamed in his face. "It is me!" And through his madness, Ralph saw the white cowtail tassels about the neck and held the stroke the two lines of attackers had met. "It is over," Izasi panted, and Ralph looked about him in bewilderment. It had happened so swiftly. He shook his head to free the cold vice of fighting madness that gripped it. They were all down, though a few of them still twisted and twitched and groaned. "Izasi, finish them," Ralph ordered, and watched the Zulus begin the grim work, passing quickly from body to body, feeling for the pulse below the ear, and if they found it, stilling it with a quick thrust. "Ralph!" Harry came scrambling down the slope at the head of the Cape Boys. "By God, that was what—" "No English," Ralph warned him. Then, raising his voice, "We will take the horses now. Bring the spare bridles and lead reins." There were 53 fine horses in the Thornbush kraal. Most of them carried the BSA company brand. Each of the unmounted Zulus and Matabele selected a mount, and the remaining animals were put on to lead reins. In the meantime, the Cape Boys were going over the field with the speed and precision of born footpads, selecting the rifles that could be used, and throwing the ancient Martini Henrys and muzzle loaders and knob carries onto the fire, snapping the assegai blades in the fork of a tree. The loot they discovered, cutlery and crockery and clothing of European manufacture, proved that this impi had taken part in the depredations of the first few days of the rising. That, too, was thrown upon the flames. Within an hour of the first rifle shot, they were moving out again. This time every man was well mounted, and the spare horses followed at a canter on the lead reins. They rode down the main street of Bulawayo in the uncertain grey light of pre-dawn. In the front rank, Ralph and Harry had scrubbed most of the blackening from their faces, but to make certain they did not draw the fire of a jittery sentry, they carried a flag made from Harry Mello's white flannel undershirt. The inhabitants of the lager tumbled out of their beds to gape and question. And then as they began to realize that this little cavalcade heralded the first retaliation against the slaughter and arson committed by the tribes, the cheering began and rose into joyous hysteria. While Vicky and Elizabeth proudly served them a double ration of breakfast under the wagon awning, Ralph and Harry received an endless string of well-wishes, of tearful widows whose husbands had perished under the Matabele assegais, bringing thanks and a half-dozen eggs or a freshly baked cake, of wistful boys came merely to stare at the heroes, and of keen young men demanding eagerly, "Is this where we sign up to join Ballantyne's scouts?"